From the Lind Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of June, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will join us to take a look at the weather forecast. If you can stay with us for the full hour, you'll be able to hear on our home station all of our Commodity Week program with our panelists, including Mike Zuzulo, Greg Johnson, and Logan Kimmel. If not, it's up online right now at willag.org, willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry the program over the weekend. We'll lead today with the EPA, or the Environmental Protection Agency, which released its proposal for the Renewable Volume Obligations, or RVOs, for 2026 and 27. Jeff Cooper, the president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, says the numbers are a positive signal for America's ethanol industry and corn farmers.
The proposed number for 2026, the total is 24.02 billion gallons, which would be the highest renewable fuel standard ever. 15 billion gallons would be reserved for conventional renewable fuels like corn ethanol, and the other 9.02 billion gallons would be advanced biofuels. And within that, EPA's proposal includes 5.61 billion gallons of biomass-based diesel, which is a significant increase from what is being required in 2025 and should really help that side of the industry get back up on its feet and start increasing volume again.
Again, that's Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association. For his part, University of Illinois agricultural economist, member of the Farm Dog team, Scott Irwin, said of the proposal, quote, again, these are just the starting point. We have to know what the SREs are to know the true bottom line RVO. SREs are the small refinery exemptions, and those will make a big difference in how much ethanol is required to be in the gasoline supply for 26 and 2027. July corn in Chicago finished $4.44.5, up 6 cents today. December at $4.43, 2.5 higher. July beans jumped 27.5 cents to finish at $10.69.75. November new crop at $10.54.75, up 27.5 cents. And bean oil was up the $3 limit. Mike Zuzulo now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate that.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, yesterday, during our recording of Commodity Week, there were two things that we discussed that took place either yesterday afternoon or this morning that hadn't taken place at that point. You made some really important points as it related to the potential for Israel at that time to attack Iran. That happened not long, actually, after we recorded. How did the marketplace in Chicago and New York take the attack, and what do you expect for it to continue to do over the next several days?
Yeah, that second part's really hard to determine right now, Todd, because we don't know exactly how much the United States may or may not have a role in anything future or moving forward here. I think because the president and his party in Congress are probably drawing a red line with Iran not doing anything to our embassies or our military in the area. And if they would, that would probably mean that we would become much more offensive instead of trying to still get a peace deal worked out in a pretty low likelihood environment. To your first question, the market reacted as expected in terms of Wall Street broke hard, crude oil broke hard to the upside. And the bean oil market was the one that really changed its dynamic. And I don't want to say erased the WASDE report, but it could have started a shift in the trend for the soybeans. And this is coming from an analyst and a person that's recommended being 100% hedged and bought puts as of two and a half weeks ago, worried about the tariffs and worried about the export demand and the lack of domestic demand that we were not seeing, especially as it pertained to bean oil. But not only did we get the Israeli attack on Iran to fuel the energy sector, we saw a very big shock in the RFS requirement, and the new EPA expectations were, not even close to being met on Thursday. And that's what we talked about as well on Commodity Week, where the idea that biofuel blending mandates would be much lower than what they came out on Friday. And as a result of that, the bean oil market was able to go limit up, and looks like we're going to be at an extended limit up, I think 4.5 cents now when we come back.
Because I was not watching overnight, though I did take a quick look at the marketplace, did bean oil jump after the Iran attack? Because these two things were separated by, more than 12 hours, the release of the RVOs or the renewable volume obligations, which we already have heard about. Those numbers were big, particularly for renewable diesel production. But how did that bean oil react? Was it up or down after the Iran attack?
No, you bring up a good point, because I was on the obviously watching the markets after the Iran attack was televised or came across the wires, and the bean oil was still leading the pack, but the bean oil was probably up only about 1 or 1.25 at that point in the top end market that I was looking at, and the soybeans were only up 6 to 7 instead of closing on new monthly highs like we did on Friday afternoon. So I really think that the soybean dynamic, because as you say, the big number came from the biomass-based diesel, and we have a lot to uncover still, but we've essentially gone from a 3.35 billion gallon mandate up to a 5.36 billion gallon mandate for 2025, and then it jumps it goes from 3.35 in 2025 to 5.61 in 2026. So a 67% increase in that mandate for next year. And we're going to have to figure out how much of that. We figure we have a little over 5 billion gallons of capacity in biomass-based diesel at this point. That's coming from a couple different sources, including your own U of I, but also Biodiesel Magazine. So I'm looking at a situation where, are we going to see a third or a 50% increase when it comes to the July report by USDA, and USDA bases everything off the Department of Energy. Will the Department of Energy move, or will they wait? So a lot of questions, but it could really change this market look in terms of any lost export demand in soybeans could be offset in a good portion by this new update.
Yeah, and so the update also showed 15 billion gallons for the use of ethanol. Well, it would be corn-based. It's not required to be that way, but of course it will be that way. It does not, however, give any indication of what the small refinery exemptions might be. And as you know, Scott Irwin here on campus has said, despite the fact we've seen these numbers, it's the SREs that will really make a difference in what this looks like by the time we get to the usage side.
Yeah, very much excellent points. And I think this is where it goes back to the 1079 plus area is the February high. That is the 2025 high in the soybeans. We're not far from that after Friday by getting close to the May highs. My take is very simple at this point, Todd, and we're in a trading range market until we break through 1080 on the front end. If we do that, then we've changed the trend. And I also, we talked about this on Commodity Week and didn't talk too much in detail because we didn't have a lot of detail on this either. But the big shift in basis from July to November in your part of the country all the way into central Indiana on Thursday afternoon sent negative shockwaves through the soybean complex, the mercantile exchange, but also especially the cash market. I want to see if that comes back now next week since we've gotten this new EPA rule, the proposed rule, and that USDA has formally endorsed.
We will be watching it all. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You bet, Todd. Happy Father's Day to you and all the great dads out there listening.
That's Mike Suzzolo. He is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Daggerville. Another good Friday for us today. Thank you much, Eric, for being with us. I have to admit, this morning I was up early, and that was the softest, gentlest, most wonderful summer rain I have seen in a long time. It was just beautiful out today.
Well, you know, what's interesting about it is it's part of a low that came out of Texas. And so, you know, usually when we transition to the middle of June, we stop getting, you know, big low pressure systems or well-defined fronts, and everything starts to go over to just a what we call a summer convective pattern. So these are just, you know, thunderstorms distributed where, you know, the instabilities ride and there's a little bit of lift in the atmosphere. But no, this is a big, big circulating low, and it's moving through the state now, and it'll be around for a lot of the day, giving us chances for rain and also knocking the temperatures back a little bit. But you're right, it was nice just to get a gentle rain. It's been a while since we felt that way.
Yeah, it was fantastic. On the heat, producers and the crop both would like a little bit of that heat. The overnight lows haven't been terribly low. They haven't dropped back into the 50s. I think it was nearly 70 this morning at, I don't know, 5:30, 6 o'clock a.m. Can you tell me about what this weather forecast looks like for the Midwest over the next, 5 to 7 days?
Yeah, we kind of have our first real summer ridge coming in. And so it's going to make its way here starting soon. And the temperatures are going to respond in kind. And we need it to. I mean, it's nice to see that there's a 7 day forecast where on average, we're going to be 3 degrees warmer than normal around here and grab about 180 GDDs in the next 7 days. But so Saturday, touching 80, Sunday, low 80s, Monday, mid 80s. And to see the temperatures come up, we have a chance of rain next Tuesday, Wednesday. But it's going to come in on some warmer conditions before a quick fall off in the temperatures after that. So yeah, we have some heat coming through. Some parts of the Western Corn Belt have already seen it. I mean, it was deep in the 90s in Iowa and in parts of Nebraska earlier this week. And Iowa took a pretty hard hit across those northern counties with some severe weather too. So just something to think about there. But Todd, there's one thing that's going to change, okay? And as we get into summer, it's going to be this narrative on, all right, we're going to stop talking about fronts. We're going to stop talking about big low pressure systems. We're going to start talking about ridges and ridge runners and Bermuda highs and Pacific highs and the kinds of things that control summer weather. So that's what I think this second half of June is going to look like. We're going to start to see more of that, and it's going to start to feel a bit more like summer than what it's felt like for a while, which is a legit, you know, prolonged spring. So yeah, be prepared. It's going to change.
Well, let's go on vacation. We'll head to Bermuda. Oh, wait, we're going to talk about the Bermuda high. Tell me about it just a bit.
Well, it's the time of year where the positional strength of the Bermuda High is everything, okay? So the Bermuda High is this high-pressure cell that sits mainly between Bermuda and the Azores, so we call that the Central North Atlantic. And when we keep it in that place, we tend to do fine on rainfall because it opens up Gulf moisture transport. We tend to have plenty of you know, lift in the atmosphere, and we get storms. So it's the years where the Bermuda High begins to weaken or drift or spread out rather than stay a bit more concentrated. And our worst summers where we get really hot and dry are those when the Bermuda High gets way up into the North Atlantic. Now, right now, is there risk of that? Sure, there's risk of that every year. Do I see it happening, like bringing in extremely hot, persistent, dry weather? No, not yet. We're going to be, for the most part, enjoying, you know, an open Gulf and more ridge-riding storms for a little while here. But there's just this, you know, this thought in the back of our heads that we need to keep an eye on a lot of factors that can control that Bermuda High. And it might start to drift off as we approach July. I think that's just important to know, but it's there's no guarantee in it. But that's it. You got to watch the high pressure cells. They ultimately dictate where everything goes.
Is there much of a difference between the eastern and the western Corn Belt?
There is. So we are already noticing that parts of Texas and Oklahoma, which have been very stormy and very wet, a lot of hail, a lot of heavy rains, that the new 14-day forecast is now pulling them off onto the drier, hotter side of things. And I was getting calls last night from some of our guys down in Texas saying, hey, you know, is it true we're going to be getting hot and dry? And then earlier this week, I was in Owensboro, Kentucky, and it was the same concern. They've been so wet. I mean, Todd, there's a place just outside of Owensboro, which is right along the Ohio River, south of like the Indiana border, where already this year they're approaching 50 inches of rain. So the very first thing they want to know is, when is it done? Because they need it now to stay wet, right? That's what they need. It's got to stay wet, because if it gets dry, that crop is not going to be able to survive very well in that, given that it's been so used to growing with plenty of water right there in the top 2 to 3 inches. So they're very concerned about that, and with good reason. Summer can flip on a dime for those areas, and we need to just be paying attention to that Bermuda High to see if it does. So yeah, a lot going on across the country as we now watch spring wrap up and summer start to transition in.
But a lot going on, but no discernible real issues at this point? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well, I think there are issues. I just don't know that it's the kind that the market cares about. You know, everybody I've talked to, okay, has said, hey, we've got some problems, uneven emergence. We've had cool weather at the end of May and beginning of June. So they're already talking about disease pressure, right? Because cool, wet weather in May, we know what that does for, you know, our gray leaf spot, what it does for tar spot, what it does for these fungal pressures that can start to move around and cause problems. So we're starting to figure out, hey, we need to start defending against this because it could be an issue. And this is a year, given where commodity prices are now, that we need to do everything we can to maximize yields. So I then see all the wet weather in the Mid-South. Do you remember back in April and most of May, they were irrigating the crop in Nebraska, and you can't look up in the northern plains and just say everything's been real great there either, because they had flooding in central North South Dakota, and they also had some drier weather that hit the Red River Valley at times. So I'm looking at this going, where's the garden spot? And if you pin me down and say find it, I would tell you that right now it's probably I-80 from northern Indiana all the way over to Omaha. But I would also tell you that those folks will tell you right to your face, hey, we may be the garden spot, but we also don't have a whole lot of extra subsurface soil moisture that's just ready to be, you know, used in the event that we get hot and dry. So I think the crop's vulnerable, but there's still a lot of time to see if Mother Nature will provide what it needs.
One last place to check on internationally, though, not too far away, Canada. It's been really dry in parts of the Canadian prairies. They have had difficulty over a series of years. What kind of conditions do you see for them?
Well, the drier and halfway decently warm start means that they actually got a crop in fast. But, you know, we saw all that wildfire smoke. Most of it was actually north of the prairie. It was in the forested areas. In fact, there's still some smoke in the sky today from that. But as we, you know, go forward, I've got halfway decent chances of storms in the Western Prairie, a little drier along the U.S.-Canada border with parts of Montana and North Dakota. But, you know, they're hanging in there as we are, because that smoke also kept them a little cooler too. So they're concerned, though. They still think that one of the years they worry about is 2021 returning. I don't think that's a good worry this year, but they're also feeling quite vulnerable too, given the lack of good subsurface soil moisture.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again in 2 weeks.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you much. That is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribum. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org.